Welcome, I'm Meredith E. Abarca, your hostess for today's episode. El Paso Food Voices explores El Paso, Texas food landscape by gathering food-based stories from our residents. This project offers a taste of a living history that speaks to the ethnic and racial cross-cultural connections. If we are what we eat, we are committed to highlighting the food-based cultural history of the city and its spirit. Let's begin our conversation with our guest for today, Enrique Lozano, chef and owner of El Charlatan, Taqueria y
Ramenia.
Ramenia. I was trying to figure out how to pronounce that correctly. And his sous chef, Gil Bustamante, que está aquí con nosotros también. El Charlatan is located at 10180, correct?
Correct.
Socorro Road in Socorro, Texas.
That's right.
For those of you who do not know, Socorro, Texas is just about 20 minutes east of El Paso. So it's very close by. It's in what we call the Lower Valley.
Yeah.
Basically. So with this introduction, welcome once again.
Thank you.
And let's learn about who Enrique is and how Enrique got into the world of cuisine.
Okay. Sounds good. So I guess you can say my culinary sort of adventure started when I was very young, growing up in Juarez, our neighbor city. My dad used to be a chef at a maquila. So besides that, he would always do caterings for weddings and stuff like that, mainly focused on baked goods, like cakes and stuff like that, cookies for weddings. So I was always sort of like around food, I guess at the level of like, not just my mom's cooking, which my mom cooked a lot too, and she was an awesome cook. But at the level of like, you know, like making food for somebody, like selling food and, you know, industry wise. So I was always around it. I didn't know then that that's what I wanted to do. But once I realized that, you know, I needed to get serious about a career in high school, I stumbled upon cooking class there when I was a senior. And things just started clicking, and it all made sense. So I guess you could say it started at home, you know.
Which high school? Are we talking about high school in Juarez or high school here in El Paso?
Socorro High School. I graduated 2010 from Socorro High School.
And the class, what, the culinary class was in Socorro High School?
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was actually the teacher there at the time was Zeno. So from Zeno's Greek and Mediterranean, he was a teacher there. So it was kind of like, It's a funny, like, I don't know, kind of meant to be sort of story. Like, I was a student there, and then I went to EPCC for a little bit. I was a student there, too, for one of his classes. And then I went on to, like, work for him for, like, 7 years.
For our guests who might not know what EPCC is the community college here in El Paso.
Yes.
And Sino, you're referring to the Greek restaurant, right?
The Greek restaurant. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which there's two, one in Montana and one on Mesa.
Owned by Zeno.
By Zeno, yeah. Where his name's Hakim Swigney, but Zeno is his nickname, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's the name of the restaurant.
And so you started in high school with this culinary class, and it got your interest. What about food? What was it about it that called to you?
I think I've always been very creative and artistic in a way. I've always liked the drawing and writing and I even took some acting classes in high school. I just always liked arts of all kinds. It wasn't until I really started like looking into like food like as an art form that kind of that's when it called me. And not just that, but I was also a football player in high school. And the way that a kitchen is run is very similar to the way a football team is run. Where do you have your coach? You have your head chef, you know, you do things right. You get, you know, it's instant gratification. You know, you tackle a player, you fumble the ball. It's instant gratification. You make a dish right. You serve it to somebody. They smile. They like it. It's instant gratification. And at the same time, it's just, you know, like you're presenting yourself to somebody like through your food. So it was a way for me to express like my feelings, my art, and how much, you know, I like to do things right.
Well, you get ahead of some of the ideas of parts of the story that I wanted to hear from. And one of them is that the restaurants do represent the food that they serve, tell a story.
Right.
And oftentimes it's the story of the chef, right, of the creator of those recipes. Mm-hmm. So one of the comments that I would like to hear, and I'm sure that our audience would like to hear from who's Enrique, who has these wonderful restaurants, because you've had two. But before we get there, walk us a little bit through the experiences, because you mentioned Sino, but I understand that you also work for him, or you work at Sino's, right. The restaurant. And then my understanding from what I know a little bit about your story is that you also then moved out of El Paso, or the El Paso area, to work at another restaurant in Chicago, I believe.
Right.
And then something brought you back. So why don't we just walk a little bit through that journey, and then we'll talk about the creativity of food.
Okay, sure. So I guess my journey to Chicago started by watching Netflix with my dad. It's been really inspiring to watch shows like Chef's Table, Mind of a Chef, and stuff like that, because it gives you an insight to what otherwise you wouldn't be exposed to living here in El Paso, where, you know, not taking anything away from the city, but the culinary scene is not as high as, you know, a city like Chicago or New York, where they have like restaurants that, you know, serve very fine dining food. That's not something that's here yet. So watching shows like that really inspired me to, you know, do a lot of things. But this was a specific show that we were watching, Chef's Table with Grant Achatz from Chicago. And me and my dad were watching it, and he just mentioned to me, he said, mira, yo siempre he querido estar en un restaurante así que sus chefs tengan la camiseta blanca con la gorra y que haya muchas personas así, muchos trabajadores trabajando así juntos con todos. And I was like, yeah, yo también siempre he querido trabajar en un restaurante así, no he tenido la experiencia esa. And he told me, pues, ¿por qué no aplicas? And I was like, no, pues, ¿cómo me van a ver a mí alguien del Paso que nomás ha trabajado en un restaurante de comida griega? ¿Cómo me van a ver a mí como alguien que les pueda ayudar? Y me dijo, pues nomás inténtalo. And I was like, okay, I'll try it out. And I sent them an email. And I mean, within a week, I was already set up to go do a stage, which a stage is like a tryout. And it could be a day, 2 days, a week. This was a 2-day tryout that I go and you work there for 2 days from beginning to end. And they kind of get a test for you and you see what it's like. So yeah, within a month when that happened, I was in Chicago, I did the stage, and it was like one of the toughest experiences I've ever had in my life. It was a culture change, culture shock, really. I'm not just talking about the city, but the restaurant itself, like the variety of minds that were at play there. It was incredible to see all that, but everybody working in unison and very precisely and professionally, which is something I hadn't really experienced. Everything was super clean. Everything was super quiet. And it was an experience that was very shocking. And I didn't know if I was ready for that, because it was very tough. It was something that I wasn't used to. And it kind of felt like my first day in like football, where it was like either you quit or you keep on going, you know. And it was very much like that, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to stay or not. But I guess the second day that I was there, and they told me that they really liked how I worked and all that, I thought I'd give it a chance. So another month passed by, and I went back to work there. So I basically moved, I guess, from one corner of the United States to the other corner, literally. I put everything I had in a U-Haul, and my dad and my girlfriend at the time, we all went down to Chicago, and they dropped me off, and it was like, okay, you're on your own now. And that was kind of like the first time away from home. It was pretty crazy. I gotta say it was a tough experience, because I didn't know it was so hard getting like an apartment over there or somewhere to live, really. And I was like, for a week, I was just, you know, like renting hotels and stuff like that. And it was just, I was starting to run out of money, and obviously I had a job, so it wasn't too much of a problem, but it was something that was concerning to me. And even for like a time, like there was like a night that I spent the night at in the U-Haul, because I didn't want to spend money in the hotel. So it was like that was kind of when I hit like a breaking point. And I remember I called my mom and I told her, like, crying. I was like, I don't think I'm going to do it. I'm just going to take the U-Haul and go back to El Paso. Like, I'm already out of money, and like, I'm not ready. And she never, like, she was a very emotional woman. But that was one of the times where like she didn't show any emotion, and she just told me, she said, like, very calmly, she was like, what's your issue? And I said, well, money. And she was like, that's the only issue? Do you like your job? Do you like what you're doing? I was like, yeah, no, it's great. The job is great, and it's a great opportunity. She was like, if money is your only issue, she said, amarrate los huevos. So, like, basically, like, you know, like, toughen up. And I was like, what? Like, this is coming from my mom, like, the woman that, like, loved me the most, you know, like, that cared for me, and, you know, I was a little baby. So I was like, oh, that's, I was like, okay. She was like, sí, tienes un trabajo, y sí, malo fuera si no tuvieras trabajo y estuvieras viviendo en las calles, pero tienes un trabajo y el dinero va a venir. Si te gusta lo que estás haciendo, quédate. So I that helped me, and I decided to stay, and I finally ended up finding a place to stay with a family there. It was really cool people from Chicago. That one of them was the woman in the house. She had a rock band, and her boyfriend was a comedian. So it was really cool, like a really cool house that I was able to stay at. And yeah, so my experience there basically lasted about 6 months. Towards the end, my girlfriend's mom had developed cancer, so it was getting to like it was terminal, and it was getting to that point where I had to make a decision if I wanted to come back and, you know, be with my girlfriend while that was happening and all that. So I decided to come back, and it was very cool because the people there at the restaurant, they really wanted me to stay, so they were offering me to, you know, bring on my family, I guess, my girlfriend and, you know, and her brother, it was them two basically that were living with her mom. But at the end of the day, I decided it was better to stay in El Paso, go back to El Paso and, you know, see what we could do there. So when I came back, that's when my first restaurant happened. So Nishi Ramen.
Okay. So in Chicago, you were there for 6 months then.
That's right.
That's quite an interesting story. Thanks for sharing that with us. What kind of food were you actually being introduced to prepare in Chicago? Because I would imagine that it would be very different than what you cook, what you were used to cooking or seeing here in El Paso.
Yeah. So the concept about the restaurant that I was at is called Next. And then it says it in the name. The menu changes every 3 months, and what they do is that they get sort of like an iconic menu from like it could be a time period, it could be a place, it could be a book, it could be a movie, it could be anything. The restaurant's been open for like 7 years, and they've changed the menu 3 months every, you know, like since they opened, every 3 months. So it's kind of the time that I was there was pretty cool because it was a time when they were doing the French Laundry menu. So the French Laundry is a restaurant extremely well known in Napa Valley. And it's, I mean, to a lot of people, that's kind of like, you know, where it all started. It definitely was for Grant Achatz, you know, that's where he started his career, and fine dining. And so it was very cool to see that, you know, sort of like it was basically like if I was working at the French Laundry in Chicago, right? Cause it was all by the book, by their book. And so at that time it was French Laundry, and it was like the epitome of like fine dining, like in the French sense, where we were cooking things that were I never worked with before, like a caviar, you know, like really expensive caviar, truffles, and, you know, very expensive cuts of meat that I was never around, you know, because of where we're at. And so it was that, basically just French fine dining at that time. I was also there for like a little bit, since I was there for 3 months. I was there for the next menu that was going to be Ancient Rome. So I was there for that too. And they did some stuff with that, which is really cool. You know, like the creativity level there is very precise. It's very methodical, really. Like the way they decide what they're going to do, you know, they had to come up with this tasting menu, which is like there, I think it was like 12 courses or 15. And, you know, it was very cool, like, seeing all the chefs that were at the top coming up with how they're going to do things and all that. And then just delegating instructions and recipes to the cooks. It was pretty cool to see.
So you came back to El Paso, and I'm sorry for the circumstances that brought you back to El Paso. Okay. But, you know, all of us go through life in one way or another, and that's part of life, right? But you came back to El Paso, and you've had two restaurants. Right now you have a Charlatan, and we'll talk about that and its name and everything. Mm-hmm. But you had another restaurant downtown, which was called...
Nishi Ramen.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your training and your experience in Chicago with French food and so forth. Now we go to this ramen, Asian cuisine. How does that transition happen, and why this particular restaurant? Tell us a little bit of the history about that particular, your first restaurant here in El Paso, which I think it was downtown, right?
Yes, basically catty corner with the Southwest University Park and on San Antonio Street. Mm-hmm. So...
And what year are we talking about? When was
2017.
2017.
Mm-hmm. I was 26 at the time, and I had just gotten back from Chicago. So if I may talk about a little bit about why I got into ramen in the first place.
Please.
I tried ramen for the first time when I was about 21, here in El Paso in a restaurant called Matsuharu on the Northeast. It's a super cool restaurant, very kind of like a hole-in-the-wall restaurant. It's off of Dyer and Hercules. And that's where I tried ramen for the first time. And supposedly this restaurant's been open for years and years and years. So I had just never been to it, and my friend took me. And I tried ramen there for the first time the way it actually is supposed to be, you know, not from a box or, you know, microwave. And it was really life-changing. Like when I tried it, it was kind of like, okay, well, like, this is amazing. Like, I didn't know you could put this much flavor, this much technique into a plate. And I wanted to experience it and explore it more. So then I just started, you know, getting books and looking up YouTube recipes and, you know, everything I could about ramen. I just then dove straight into it. And with the help of my friend at the time, too, we started making ramen, our own ramen recipes, which at the beginning were horrible. But... you know, like fast forward, you know, 5 years later, and I was finally happy with a recipe of ramen. And this was before I went to Chicago. I started selling ramen house to house. I would just put it on my social media, and I would be like, "Hey, I'm selling ramen today. I'll go to your house. I'll prepare it, and then I'll take off." Like basically like a instant private chef, you know. So I would that kind of started really taking off, and I would do that like twice a month. And eventually I started getting clients that were like in the industry, you know, and they had restaurants and bars. And I got the chance to go to a bar, and one of the bar owners there, he separated from that bar and opened his own bar, which at the time was called Tradecraft, which was like one of the first fancy bars, you know, in El Paso. And he asked me if I wanted to do a ramen night there or a ramen pop-up. So that's kind of like when, you know, like the word pop-up kind of like started off, and it was like we were the first like ramen pop-up at a bar. And I thought the idea was great, so that's what we did. And it was kind of curious too, because when I got there, it was like, "Hey, where's your kitchen?" And he's like, "Well, there's a room here in the back that you could use." But it was like, it was just like a room with a sink, and that's it. There was no kitchen. So it was like, figure it out. And so, yeah, we figured it out, and we did that for like 6 months, I want to say. And then that's when I went to Chicago. I came back. I talked to this guy, and I told him, "Hey, you know what? I need to open a restaurant. What do you know? Where are some spots?" And he it was kind of like we became business partners then, and that went on to Nishi. He found the spot for me, and we dove into it. At the beginning, in Nishi Ramen, since I had all this kind of like build up inspiration from Chicago and Next. I was super like overly ambitious for the menu. I was doing things that people weren't really ready for yet. So it was very much and me myself I wasn't ready for. I mean I was 26 and I didn't know how to run a restaurant, but I was just, you know, I was like, I'll learn as I go with a lot of things. And what I did learn as I go, and at the beginning it was very rough, but then it started kind of like smoothing out. And then I started getting in a groove, and I was happy with what I was doing. But it was by then it was like second year. It was already like, I think, too late to kind of like, you know, to be able to like tell the story how I wanted to tell it. So not just that, but then construction started downtown, where it was like really like bad, where which it still is, but it was very hard to get to the restaurant. There was no parking there, and it was the foot traffic there wasn't what we wanted at all. So I just decided to close down. I was like, okay, I tried it, to see what's next. So it was like within the week, I was talking to the people over at Taftias inside the Stanley House. Like within the week that I closed, I started working there. So
this is another restaurant, right?
That's another restaurant. Mm-hmm. So yeah, from Nishi Ramen, I went to Taftias, and I think I'm kind of getting ahead of your question, but
no, I just want to make sure that our audience understand what Taftias is. It's a high end taqueria for intents and purposes.
Yeah, basically.
And it's a reference to these two presidents.
Yeah.
Or if the word president fits both of them, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not going to get into politics. So it's another restaurant that we have downtown here in El Paso that sells really high end tacos.
Right.
And I think that it's good that you're bringing that up, because I'm sure that has had an influence into where you are now. So let's move to your new restaurant, mm-hmm. El Charlatan, Taqueria and
Ramania.
Ramania. And I want to begin with first talking about the title, why Charlatan? And the other question that I have is your location. It's important that you talk about your location. Why did you pick, or maybe what drove you to Socorro? And I think you already mentioned that because you are from Socorro.
That's right. Yeah, I was, when I was 11, my parents moved to the States, and we have found a home in Socorro. And that's where I grew up ever since I was like 11 years old. And I've been there ever since. And the building itself that I found, it was a building that I would pass by a lot because it's in Socorro Street. So everybody that's in Socorro goes through Socorro Street at least once a day. So I saw this building, and I didn't know what it was at first. It was always very curious because it was such a huge building, and it was like, you could, sometimes they were working on it, sometimes they weren't, sometimes there were lights on, sometimes, And then all of a sudden I saw this for lease sign, and I didn't know I wanted to do a restaurant at the time. I mean, I didn't know when or why or I didn't know the specifics, but I know I wanted to do something. But so I just, out of curiosity, I just called the guy, his name's John Hernandez, and I called him and I said, hey, I think I want to do a restaurant at your spot. And he was like, what? He was like, have you seen it? And I was like, no, I haven't seen it. I've seen it from the outside, and I live in Socorro. And he's like, let me send you some pictures. Like, that's all he said. And he sent me the pictures, and I fell in love with it. Like, it was like, I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but this is what I want. And I told him, I was like, okay, like, let's see what we can do. He's like, so he asked me more about myself, and coincidentally, he would go to Nishi and he would go to Taftia, so he knew about me, And so I mean, basically, like I signed the lease with him, and I still didn't know, what I wanted to do or what, but I knew I had to be in Socorro, and thinking of what I wanted to do as far as like a menu, it was just I decided it was going to be my life experiences, basically, in a menu, where you meet my love for Asian cuisine and culture, and some stuff that I learned in Chicago, and stuff that I learned at Zeno's. There's no actual, like Greek food or French food in the menu, but it's still like there was a lot of techniques and a lot of ingredients and stuff that I do, apply, and just the way the restaurants were run. So I knew I wanted to do that. And then, with my influence, that I got from Taft Diaz as well, with, Chef Oscar Herrera, Jorge Ortiz, and Michael Diaz de Leon, which they were like the top chefs there. From there, I experienced a side of Mexican cooking that I wasn't aware of from Taftias. I didn't know how fine dining it could be, and they showed me how fine dining it could be, how very much like what we're doing at Next, but with Mexican food. So I definitely got experience from there and inspiration more than anything. So I got that, and I added it to, like the Charlatan. And not just that too, but right around that time that I was gonna open, like I already signed the lease and everything, but I had my first daughter, my only daughter, right around that time. And they say, you know, kids change you. And I think she definitely, you know, changed me. She kind of gave me perspective and just kind of like an understanding for life that I didn't know, you know. So I would say that was definitely like an influence too as to what I wanted to do. It was kind of more like, okay, well, it's time for you to tell your story, you know, without being afraid of, you know, being judged by, oh, well, what are these guys doing? Are they Asian? Are they Mexican? What are they? So I was like, no, you know what? People are ready, you know, to experience, have new experiences and stuff like that. So I decided, okay, I'm going to do both. And it's not going to be fusion. It's just going to be, I'm going to present the people in Socorro that I grew up with what's available out there. So that was basically my idea. It was like, okay, sure, people are going to come from other parts of town, but I want to show Socorro what's available, what's out there, what they should be expecting from restaurants, not just with food, but with service. And I think because the people in Socorro is there's a variety of clientele there. There's very wealthy people in Socorro, and then there's people not so wealthy. So I kind of wanted to reach both too. But at the same time, more than anything, just kind of being able to bring an experience to a town that otherwise would never have it. You know, if you would have told me when I don't know, 5 years ago, there's going to be a restaurant in Socorro that's going to be James Beard nominated, I would have laughed. You know, it's crazy. So I think that's just like a testament to like what Socorro is and what it can do. When I was in Nishi and it was more like El Paso, you know, which obviously Socorro is still El Paso, but it was two different dynamics as far as the government, as a governing body. In El Paso, it was very much like you're on your own, like pay us this much for this and that, but you guys are on your own, you know, like we'll do something like late last Thursdays, and that's not really through the city, that's more like through like the downtown management. But you know, it was just very like, yeah, like you guys figure it out. And so Carl, it was totally different. It was like, what do you guys need? You know, like, what? How can we help you? How can we, like, we want you guys to succeed. And that's been a change that I've seen in Socorro, like over the last 10 years. It wasn't always like that. It was very much like an old town mentality where it's like, this is Socorro and this is what it's always going to be. And you know what I mean? Like, there's not going to be no progress. But now with the people that we have in office and stuff like that, they're definitely there to help us out. Not just the restaurants or businesses, but the people too. They want to hear us. They want to know what the city needs. And they're pushing really hard to, you know, show the highlight what Socorro has to offer. So they definitely helped us out too. They've given us a couple of recognitions from the restaurant. Whenever they can, they use us as caterers, and not just us, but other restaurants in Socorro. And so I think that's helped a lot too. But yeah, I think it's just kind of like all like a, like it was very situational, very organic, like sort of like thing that happened with El Charlatan. Everything just started falling into place, and people really, you know, they go and they don't really know what to expect. But then we receive them with tortillas de harina, freshly made with butter, and it's like, oh, okay, you know, this is, I can breathe now. Yeah, this is not gonna be that bad. And you know, so but then they look at a menu and you know, it's like, okay, well, I've been thinking about ramen, so let's try it out. And then we have a server that comes and explains to you what it is and how it's made. And so I think it's worked so far.
Okay, I think we get the whole understanding of the taqueria aspect and the ramen aspect. Why Charlatan?
So I had an idea. I liked, like I say, you know, I'm a very creative person, and I like to do a lot of like play on words and stuff like that. Even in my menu, like I like to do play on words. Like one of the plates in the menu is called El Panzón because that's what my dad would call me when I was, and he still called me that, Panzón. And so it was like, it's just this plate of pork belly, and you know, like what's pork belly? Panza. So, you know, Panzón. But so El Charlatan, it was a name that I had come up with before the restaurant for a concept that I wanted to do at home where I live. I wanted to have a basically like a a carne asada to sell, right? Like I wanted to do what a carne asada is, music and friends and beers and great food. I wanted to do that at home. And I was like kind of thinking of a name, and I was like, okay, well, let's see, what do we do? And then I heard it in a song or something like that, charlatan. And I was like, that's kind of a cool word. I wonder like what it actually means. And it's like, it's somebody that, you know, likes to chatter a lot, like kind of likes to, you know, BS a lot. And they're kind of like pretending to be something they're really not and stuff like that. And I was thinking about that a lot. And the name too, it says like char. So I was like char, grill, char, you know, charlatan. And then the name kind of stuck when I found this location. I was like, okay, charlatan, maybe I could use that, you know, because we're selling ramen and tacos like in Socorro, like we're like a bunch of charlatans, you know, like just trying to like do BS, you know, but not really. We're doing things the right way. It's just kind of like, I like to, you know, how they say, you know, you wear your heart on your sleeve. And so I like to tell people that, you know, we're not hiding what we're trying to do. You know, it is kind of like pretentious, but at the same time, we're doing it right. You know, don't come in with high expectations. Like, you know, like just let us surprise you.
That's a great story with a name. I've been very curious as to why Shalatha, because I know what the word means.
Right.
And because there's an interesting fusion, I was actually curious if there was a connection, and you have actually confirmed my suspicion, my theory, which is wonderful. And you also just mentioned, and I think this needs to be stressed one more time, that your restaurant has been nominated by the James Beard Award, which is quite, just being nominated is quite a prestige, it's quite a recognition by this award that is the nation's highest organization in terms of the world of the food, the culinary world.
Of course.
So congratulations on that. That is quite an honor. I want to shift directions just a little bit so we can get your sous chef.
Sure.
And directions and language. We're going to shift a little bit in español porque tengo entendido que Gil ha estado contigo desde el principio de la instalación del charlatán. So Gil, ¿qué nos puedes decir de tu experiencia trabajando con Enrique, trabajando en el charlatán? ¿Qué nos puedes compartir un poquito aquí?
Pues lo poco te podría decir que ha sido así como que un poquito de mucho aprendizaje, porque como le digo, antes de que yo empezara a trabajar con él, pues sí, había trabajos de cocina, pero pues así leves, ¿no? Lo que son, sabía hacer lo que es hacer un huevito con jamón en casa y todo eso, porque pues mi mamá me lo enseñó y todo. Siempre me quedé solo, pero entonces ya cuando entré con él, ya fue así que yo miré el menú y dije, caray, ¿qué onda? Porque...
¿Qué es esto?
Sí, porque probamos la comida antes de que abriera, porque pues, digo, empecé desde cero. Y me dijo, no, mira, esto es lo que vamos a vender, y este se llama este es el panzón, este es el purdain. Y pues probamos todos los platillos, y yo fue así de que, esto está bien bueno, le dije. Todo, o sea, yo me emocionaba, porque pues yo no decía más que más de allá de una quesadilla, ¿me explico? Entonces decía así de que, bueno, esto está, sí está suave. Y desde ahí fue donde dije yo, no, le voy a dar. Entonces, ya cuando empecé a trabajar, ya que empezamos así, que abrimos servicio y todo, fue así de que dije yo, empecé a conocerlo más a él, así de que yo, pues, sé quién es y, pero él me lo demostró más cada día más, ¿me explico? Me lo demostró, no, mira, esto es, y fue así de que, o sea, es una experiencia que, pues, probablemente la tomas, hemos tenido trabajadores que duran una semana o tanto como duran un año, y se va así como que una experiencia así de que dices, aprendí mucho en esto por la persona con la que estoy trabajando. Y sí es cierto, o sea, yo lo puedo aclarar y lo puedo asegurar que sí.
¿Y a ti qué fue lo que te trajo al mundo de la cocina? ¿Tu amistad, tu conexión con Enrique o qué les unió a los dos?
Pues para empezar, cuando agarramos a Gil... nos empezó a llevar el aspecto de la construcción, ¿no? De la reconstrucción del edificio. Y de ahí, pues, fue cuando... Yo lo sentí que él vio algo así en mí y en el restaurante, que empezó a ver la visión. Y Gil es alguien que es muy... un trabajador muy, muy, muy duro. Y aparte de eso, quiere hacer algo... También, como yo, quiere dejar su nombre. Quiere dejar su legacía. Y... Y para él es claro que eso puede pasar en el charlatán. Así que cuando yo empecé a ver eso, pues fue cuando empezó la plática así de que... antes de eso yo no lo conocía como amigo. La amistad se fue forzando con el negocio. Así que cuando empezó la plática así de que, pues, ¿qué vas a hacer cuando acabemos la construcción? No, pues no sé, pues estoy acá en, también estaba haciendo roofing y otros tipos de construcción. Y le dije, pues, si quieres venir aquí, puedes empezar de mesero y a ver cómo te gusta. Y así que así empezó, ¿no? Hacía su trabajo en roofing, construcción, y luego se venía de la noche a hacer mesero en el charlatán. Y de repente como que le empezó a atraer más la cocina y se empezó a meter más y ayudar más en la cocina. Y de repente, pues, ya era el sous chef, o que, pues, es el encargado, ¿no? Segundo del restaurante. Y, pues, fue algo muy especial para mí ver, porque, o sea, es como si estuviera viviendo lo que viví cuando estaba en Sinos, que de repente empecé como prep, y luego al final de mi carrera ahí, ya era el manejador de dos restaurantes. Así que sí, era así como que es lo que estoy viendo con Gil, y veo mucho de las ganas que yo tenía cuando, bueno, que todavía tengo, pero que yo tenía cuando empecé, lo veo en Gil. Y pues sí, es algo así que yo digo que pues ahí fue cuando, pues hasta ahorita, ¿no? Sigue aprendiendo y le gusta mucho y le echa muchas ganas en la cocina.
Well, felicidades y éxito y a seguir adelante. Enrique, tell us about one dish or one item in the menu or two that you feel most express your story, the story that you already shared with us. If I come to the restaurant and I want to, and I'm listening to this story, this podcast, and I want to try a dish that captures that journey, what is that item?
I think
maybe they're all of them, right? I don't know.
No, yeah, and just to touch on that too, is like when people ask me what's your favorite thing on the menu, and I truly, with all my heart, I say all of them, because I knew when coming up with this menu, I started with like 100 items that I was gonna put on it. Right now, there's 20, you know, so it's like I condensed that a lot, and I knew that every dish on the menu, whether even like the vegan ones, you know, where a lot of, you know, there's a lot of chefs that have this love-hate relationship with vegan food. I knew that I was gonna like all of them, like they're all gonna be good, and I wasn't gonna put a dish in the menu that I wasn't gonna eat myself. So they're all good, but the Bourdain is definitely one of the most popular ones. So the Bourdain is it's a ramen that's named after the late Anthony Bourdain, which is, you know, like a big idol of mine. And it was a ramen dish that we also had at Nishi, and it was also called the Bourdain at Nishi. And it was just, that's been like the bowl of ramen that I've been practicing since I started making shitty ramen, like way back when. So ever since then, like, this is kind of like what it's become, and it's grown like the way I've, you know, evolved and grown, like this bowl has grown with me too. So it's kind of like my baby, right? And it's already like a recipe that's like, what, let's see, like 10 years old maybe. So it's all that, you know, it's a combination of that. And I think that's kind of like a dish that you try and it's like, okay, yeah, like this is, it's not exactly ramen, you know, like traditional ramen, but it'll make you feel like you're eating ramen. And the things that it has, like the braised pork belly, the soft boiled egg, you know, it just has the right things there. And the broth itself too is very rich. So that's definitely one of the dishes that I think would represent me. Another dish too, that represents el charlatán, and not just el charlatán, but what we do is the licon cheese plate, which is a dish that where we highlight one of our purveyors, which is Licon Dairy. And that's a dish that's been on the Texas Monthly magazine as one of the top 25 dishes in the state. And so it was the idea when coming up with a menu that we wanted to highlight the people that we work with, farmers, you know, the dairy people, we have people in Juarez, Molino Azquil, that make our tortillas. So it's everything, you know, we want to make sure we highlight it. And we do it quite literally by having dishes on the menu, like Licon cheese plate. We have Sun City Root farms that they grow our microgreens. And we have a dish called, you know, Sun City Roots. And then we have Molino Askil. We have a Tostada Askil, so it's like from, you know, from the people there. And so, and we have a Bodega Loya salad, which is from the farm that's like 2 minutes away from the restaurant, which is a super cool project, you know, that I couldn't have dreamt it up any better. Like opening a restaurant and then like right around the same time, like there's this farm that they've been there for forever, but they're finally, you know, getting enough produce that they want to start selling to restaurants. And they reached out to me and it was like an instant connection. And, you know, it's like they're already like my family and it was super cool. Like they, whatever I need to be, whatever I need grown, they'll grow for me. Whatever. It could be shiso leaves, which is Japanese, kind of like a grape leaf, but it's Japanese. Onions, scallions, whatever I need grown, they'll grow up for me. And obviously it's not instant. Like they'll tell me like, this is going to take this long, this is going to take this long. And Ralph and Marty Loya are like, they're super cool people and they're like my family. And so I definitely wanted to highlight them too. So it's kind of been, like you go to the restaurant, you'll see it. You see Bodega, you see Loya Sale, you see Licon. And it's just, it creates a conversation of, you know, what a restaurant can be and how we can help each other. And I wherever I go, you know, I try to mention like at least, you know, like one or two of them, like, because it's very important to me that we all grow together. Otherwise, like, it's just going to be the same thing that's been going on forever in El Paso, where it's just like, there's little hits in there, but if we all grow together, then there's no limit to like where the city can grow as a food city.
Wow. Other than wow, I'm not sure what else to say. This is an amazing story. As I start hearing you tell the story of the dishes and the connection with the community, I'm thinking, well, El Charlatan certainly has found a home. That's for sure. It's a wonderful home.
Yeah.
A community. Yeah. Certainly a restaurant that has built on a sense of community and the fact that this is the place you grew up.
Right.
This is the place where at 11 you crossed the border from Juarez to El Paso and you went to Socorro and you know, the your community, you're growing up, has opened up the doors to you and you to them.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is obviously a reciprocal relationship that you have in terms of the business. Mm-hmm. This is an amazing, wonderful, wonderful story. Is there something else that you would like to share with us that we haven't covered? Gil, ¿hay alguna otra cosa que quisieras decir que no hemos que decir?
I think it's sort of like always my message to tell to, like, definitely like other people, other aspiring business owners, but also aspiring chefs, you know, young people that are just starting to, like, you know, get into the industry, is don't think it's necessary to leave the city to do what you need to be accomplished. It's harder work, but it can be accomplished here. And I'm definitely, you know, if you don't know me, you know, just look me up on social media or whatever and reach out to me and I'll help you, you know. Whatever, whoever needs help, like, you know, I'm there. I really want to see the city grow to what it can be, because there's so many people here that have like a lot of talent and they're afraid of, you know, like failure or what have you not. And it's like we can make this a food destination more than what it already is. And it's just gonna take a lot of courage from a lot of people and help. So, like, building that community that, you know, we're already trying to establish, you know, just it's let's create that conversation. Don't be afraid to reach out to people. Reach out to me, you know, let's grab coffee sometime and, you know, tell me your ideas and let's make them happen. Other than that, if you just, you know, like, if you just need advice, you know, I'm always there. But that's just kind of something that I want to, you know, leave out there. Don't be afraid to stay in your city. No, like, stay in your city and grow the city. That's the hardest thing you can do.
And fundamentally, I think that's what Adrian and I, in terms of creating El Paso Food Voices and working on it, is to share this incredible wealth and generous spirit, because what you just said is quite generous. And I thank you for that. And I hope that people that listen to this podcast who are local, who are interested in cooking, do reach out to you. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of us who are just interested in eating wonderful food, that we come and taste some of these incredible dishes. And I want to thank you, and I want to thank Gil too for coming to this episode, and for sharing your story of your vision, of your journey, how it became a reality.
Thank you.
And for creating dishes that fuse cultures, that bring cultures together, that bridges, that make connections, and that open our palates to the world. That's actually very important. I think the more diversity and connections we make across differences, the richer we are. And you're demonstrating that with the dishes that you created. So I want to thank once again both of you for being part of this episode.
Thank you so much.
And look forward to coming over and sharing some of the food.
Okay, we'll be there.
Thank you. El Paso Food Voices was created by Meredith E. Abarca, Professor of Food Studies and Literature at the University of Texas at El Paso. Produced by Adrian Mesa from UTEP's Creative Studios. To learn more about how food practices, memories, and stories shape a city's history, culture, and its character, please visit us at El Paso Food Voices. Thank you.